My name is Nikki Strong. You can hit me up on Facebook or Twitter at IAMNIKKISTRONG. I am Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Pete Musto, Alice Bryant, and Anna Mateo. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Pete Musto.
As stock values rise and fall during the coronavirus crisis, advisors to the world's wealthy are urging them to buy more gold. The move raises questions about the strength of the world's financial markets and the long-term effect of huge spending from central banks. Before the COVID-19 crisis, most private banks suggested that their clients hold none or just a small amount of gold. Now, some are moving up to 10% of their clients' financial holdings into the valuable metal. The stimulus spending from central banks to restart economies has reduced the amount of money investors make on bonds, making gold more appealing. The huge spending also raises the risk of inflation that would devalue other financial holdings. Gold prices have already risen 14% since the start of the year to $1,730 an ounce. Many private bankers believe that gold, which is somewhat safe from both inflation and deflation, will continue to increase in value. And the increase in demand could itself lead to higher gold prices. Representatives of 9 banks, which oversee around $6 trillion in assets for the world's extremely rich, spoke to the Reuters news service. They said they had advised clients to increase their gold holdings. 4 of them also predicted that gold prices will end the year higher than they are now. UBS, the world's biggest wealth manager, said gold could rise to $1,800 by year-end. It said this would be driven by extremely low interest rates and investors seeking gold to protect their assets. The bank suggested the price of gold could even reach a record high of $2,000 in the event of a second wave of novel coronavirus infections. Lisa Shallet is the chief investment officer for wealth management at Morgan Stanley. She said her bank is not advising clients to increase gold holdings above 10%. But she added it could get there, especially if inflation rises. John LaForge is with the Wells Fargo Investment Institute. Last year, he said he received about 2 calls a week from clients on gold. Now, he is at 2 calls a day. "I'm now getting as many questions on gold as I do on oil," LaForge said. There are 4 main ways to invest in gold. They include investing in gold mining companies and index funds, which represent shares in real gold or follow the price of gold. There is also investing in financial instruments such as futures and options, or buying gold itself in the form of bars or coins. Most of the larger banks offer storage services for gold bars and coins, long considered the safest investment. I'm Pete Musto.
The minute Rafaela Matos heard gunshots and saw helicopters over her Rio de Janeiro neighborhood, she immediately dropped to her knees to pray. She asked God to protect her 14-year-old son, João Pedro. Then she called the boy's phone. "Be calm, João Pedro," texted her, saying he was safe in his aunt's house. Just minutes later, Brazilian police burst through the door and fired their weapons. They shot the teenager in the stomach. He did not survive the attack. But his parents would not learn that for many hours. Police did not even tell them where their son had been taken. João Pedro Matos Pinto was among 600 people killed by police this year in the Brazilian state of Rio de Janeiro. That is almost double the number killed by U.S. police during the same period in America, which has 20 times more people. Like João Pedro, most of the 600 dead were Black or mixed race and lived in the city's poorest neighborhoods called favelas. The Rio de Janeiro State Public Prosecutor's Office recently described the local police as the deadliest in Brazil, even though the state, it noted, is not among the 10 most violent states in the country. As the Black Lives Matter movement brings hundreds of thousands to the streets worldwide, protesters angry about João Pedro's death are organizing the largest gatherings against police violence in years on the streets of Rio. Protester João Gabriel Moreira said, "They kill teenager after teenager in their homes every day. We're here because we need to be." Moreira made the comment at a June 10th protest. The 19-year-old civil engineering student added that he had never demonstrated about anything before this year. "Kill a young Black man in a favela, it's seen as normal. He must be a drug dealer," Moreira said. "Racism has always been hidden in Brazil," he said. "That's why so few of us are here. If Brazil had racial consciousness, this street would be filled." Rio police said they were involved in a joint search operation with military and federal police when they killed João Pedro on May 18th. A federal investigator on the case, Eduardo Benonis, said no evidence of illegal activity was found at the site of the raid. Police put João Pedro on a helicopter after the shooting, but they never took him to a hospital. And officials gave no information to his parents about where he was or how badly he was hurt. A social media campaign quickly spread the message that João Pedro was missing. His body was found the next day inside a police Forensic Center. Nilton Pinto is the boy's father. Good people live in the favela, people with families, he said. I'm sure if this were in wealthy areas, police wouldn't act this way, breaking down the house of someone good. I'm Alice Bryant.
VOA Learning English. This is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Flowers are an important part of our natural world. Their beauty and smell can make us happy. Flowers serve as food for insects, birds, and animals. And they can also feed us. Some flowers add color, unexpected taste, and beauty to food and drinks. And more people are adding them to their meals. To find out more, we talked with a few Americans who like to grow and eat their own flowers. Kathy Gents is the publisher of Washington Gardener magazine. She also gives talks to Washington, D.C. area gardeners. She tells them how to grow and use edible flowers. Gents says the way to prepare most edible flowers for your next dish or meal is to wash them lightly under water. Then remove the white parts of the flower. She also says to cut off the pistil and stamen. When speaking about edible flowers, Gents often begins with three talking points. One, know your flowers. Which ones are safe to eat? Two, know the source. Where did the flowers come from? Three, know your allergies. Which plants are you allergic to? Some flowers are poisonous and can make you sick. There are a few flowers that people think are edible, Gents says, even though they are poisonous. The most common are buttercup and sweet pea. She says the flower of the sweet pea should not be mixed up with the flower of the pea plant, which is a vegetable. Other poisonous flowers are azalea, wisteria, and foxglove. Now, here is a quick list of common edible flowers. Dandelion, nasturtium, marigold, borage, violet, lavender, lilac, chrysanthemum, chamomile, rose, daylily, hibiscus. One of the best edible flowers to start with is the dandelion. Gents says they are nutritious, and you can eat the entire plant, not just the flower. This is not true for many edible flowers. Nasturtium is easy to grow, and, Gents says, has a peppery taste. It is perfect for container gardening and for people living in a hot big city. This flower often grows well in very difficult conditions.
A container-grown flower that works really well is nasturtium, that actually prefers container growing to being in the ground. The worse conditions you can give nasturtium, the better it grows.
Many people add nasturtium to fruit or green salads. One such person is Elizabeth Littleton, a mother and cycling activist in the D.C. area. In warm weather, Littleton says she grows nasturtium on her front doorstep. She likes to add its flowers to salads or serve with other foods. Also in the DC area, Roshni Kattari says she has been growing and eating edible flowers for many years. She says that herbs are great ways to get into the world of edible flowers. Flowers from mint, rosemary, dill, oregano, cilantro, and sage add a little flavor of the herb, but they are not as strong as the leaves of the plant. Kattari says one of her favorite herbs is cilantro.
And cilantro, it's very easy to grow in a pot. If you let it go to flower, it will come back year after year. And it's used in so many different cultures. For example, I'm from India originally, from the state of Gujarat, and we use cilantro as a garnish in all the dishes we make. Without cilantro, it's not quite done yet.
Experts say the safest way to eat edible flowers is to grow them yourself. If you buy from a farmer's market or a farmer, ask them directly if they used any chemicals. Be careful buying from a food or flower store. Their flowers may have been treated with dangerous chemicals. If you go outdoors to pick edible flowers, says Kathy Jentz, do so in a safe area. Do not collect flowers from an area where dog owners walk their dogs or where chemical treatments have been used. Jentz says her personal favorite edible flower is borage. She says the plant's blue star-shaped flowers taste like cucumbers. So borage can go with many dishes.
My personal favorite is borage. The flower petals smell and taste like cucumber. The fact that you can add it on fruit salad, throw it in your gazpacho, or use it to garnish a drink is a nice bonus.
Violets are another popular edible flower. They have a sweet flavor. Use the violets in salads, sweet treats, and drinks. Also, Jentz says, violets can last a long time when left in a sealed container in the refrigerator. But, she adds, it is important to cut the flowers at the right time, just as they open. This is not true of all edible flowers. Some wilt quite fast. To avoid this, Jentz says you can use the method people have been using for centuries, dry them. Kattari explains that it is important to know how plants grow. Vegetables send out edible flowers if you let them go to seed. However, if you take all the flowers from your vegetable plants, our experts warn, you will not have any vegetables. If you want to harvest the flowers of vegetables, Jentz suggests growing a vegetable plant just for its flowers. Chamomile flowers are small and taste like apple. Chamomile is often used in tea. Jentz says chamomile flowers dry nicely and they keep their flavor. However, the website WebMD warns, avoid chamomile if you are allergic to these plants: ragweed, daisies, marigolds, or chrysanthemums. If you have allergies to ragweed and other types of pollen, Jentz advises to avoid any flower in the daisy family. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. James Madison was elected in 1808. He was a capable president who served two terms. But most Americans do not remember Madison for his presidency.
they remember him for work he did earlier. After the Revolutionary War, in which the American colonists separated from Britain, Madison proposed that the new United States form a stronger national government. Madison's vision for a three-part government, with an executive, a legislature, and an independent Supreme Court, became the basis for the Constitution we still use today. Madison went on to persuade voters to accept the proposed Constitution. He explained how a system of checks and balances would prevent any one part of government from becoming too powerful. And when voters demanded more protection for individual liberties, Madison wrote the amendments that became the Bill of Rights. These actions earned Madison the name Father of the Constitution. Madison did not have the appearance of most politicians. He was a short man with a soft voice who had been sick often as a child. He grew up in a wealthy family in Virginia. He liked to read books and to study. He went to college at the school that later became Princeton University in New Jersey. When the Revolutionary War started, Madison's intelligence and knowledge, as well as family money, helped him participate in debates about independence. Madison also held positions in the new American government he helped create, including as Secretary of State under President Thomas Jefferson. Madison did not have much of a personal life. Many people were surprised when he married a young widow named Dolly Payne Todd. She was 26. He was 43. The couple did not have children, but they raised Mrs. Madison's surviving son together. Stories suggest the two were very happy, although they had different personalities. Dolly Madison was energetic, warm, and social. She loved to throw parties, and her guests loved to attend them. Historian Catherine Algor notes, Dolly Madison often dressed dramatically, including wearing turbans covered with peacock feathers. Her weekly gatherings at the president's house were so crowded that they became known as squeezes. As First Lady, Dolly Madison did not follow her husband's idea of a strict separation of powers. She invited officials from all parts of the government to her parties, as well as people from opposing political groups. Algor says, Dolly Madison succeeded in making the president's house a symbol of unity and glamour. She remains one of the best known and most loved first ladies in U.S. history. But his wife's popularity could not prevent Madison from facing a difficult presidency. During his first term, the U.S. faced increasingly tense relations with Britain. Madison accused the British of interfering with international trade and seizing American sailors. At the same time, European American settlers blamed the British for helping native tribes fight against them. But the settlers had violated treaties between the U.S. government and the Native Americans. In 1811, Native warriors attacked U.S. soldiers at the Battle of Tippecanoe in today's state of Indiana. A U.S. general named William Henry Harrison led his troops to fight back. The result was not clear, but Harrison declared victory. The following year, Madison proposed war against Britain. Congress approved. The War of 1812 began. For most of the war, American forces failed. But in 1813, they had two notable victories in Canada. They captured and burned the city of York in Toronto. And General Harrison had another major fight with Native warriors at the Battle of the Thames. The Native Americans were defeated. The leader of the tribal alliance, Tecumseh, died from the wounds he received there. That loss ended, for the most part, the efforts of Eastern Native American tribes to push back white settlers. In 1814, the war turned again. British soldiers took the U.S. capital of Washington, D.C. Madison had already left the president's house to meet with generals in the field. Dolly Madison remained. But when she learned the British were approaching quickly, she acted. She famously ordered her servants, as well as a 15-year-old house slave named Paul Jennings, to take down a painting of George Washington. The servants, slaves, first lady, and painting all escaped to safety. Commanders of the British force took a group of men to the Capitol building and set it on fire. Then they went to the president's house. They found the table set for dinner. The British commanders stopped to toast the president before they burned his home. By the time Washington, D.C. burned, American and British officials were already in peace talks. But in the U.S., one more major battle was being fought. A militia general named Andrew Jackson led a ragtag army against a British attack in New Orleans, Louisiana. The Americans' rain of bullets and shells was so deadly that only one British soldier reached the top of the American defenses. When the British finally withdrew, they left behind more than 2,000 dead and wounded. 500 other British soldiers had been captured. 13 Americans were killed. The Battle of New Orleans was considered a great victory for the U.S. However, it was not necessary. The war had ended by treaty 2 weeks earlier. The War of 1812 almost bankrupted the U.S. government and cost the lives of tens of thousands of soldiers. It was devastating for many Native Americans. It did provide a chance for several thousand slaves to escape to freedom by serving in the British military. But it did nothing to improve the lives of most of 1 million enslaved people in the U.S. at the time. Despite all this, the war united most of the country. Albert Gallatin, Madison's Treasury Secretary, said people felt more American after the war. They acted more like a nation, he said. The song that would become the country's national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner, was written during the War of 1812. Madison benefited from most people's belief that the war was a success. The end of his second term began what historians call the era of good feelings. Madison left the presidency more popular than when he had started it. After he retired, Madison lived on his Virginia estate for nearly another 20 years. He died in his bed at age 85. A niece was in the room. She says that a strange look passed her uncle's face. She asked him what was wrong. Madison's last words were, "Nothing more than a change of mind, my dear. I always talk better lying down." I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.